You are listening to ACPN.
Good evening, America. Welcome to another edition of Adventure Club Podcast. I am John Galbo.
I am Matt Neslanek.
I am What's-His-Face.
Old What's-His-Face.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah. You son of a bitch.
And tonight...
We don't usually start with a tonight. Usually we chat for a long time about random stuff, but I think we have a exciting guest coming up in the next couple of minutes, so we'll do like a brief little shoot the shit right now, and we'll introduce our guest momentarily. Gentlemen, so,
how's your guy's shit?
Yeah, how's your guy's shit? What are we
drinking? Not in my butt anymore.
Aww, that's a shame. What are we drinking tonight?
I am drinking, sorry, I didn't mean to like just jump on that one, but kind of proud of this one. I am drinking water tonight.
Nice.
Son of a bitch.
Right?
So am I.
What's the proof water alcohol bros. On that? Alcohol on that?
It's still 40 proof water, but otherwise so known as vodka. I'm still trying to get over this cold, so I'm just hydrating. How about you, John?
I'm perpetually having a cold, but I was gifted with a nice little white iced tea, peach iced tea from Starbucks.
Why does it have to be white?
I don't know. It's like white peach iced tea and lemonade.
Alcohol or no?
No.
No.
I was going to crack open another hard root beer, but it was too late.
Pour a little Kraken in that thing. Might actually work.
Maybe. If Kraken was to be had...
Weren't Starbucks supposed to have, like, certain Starbucks stores have liquor and craft beer?
I don't know, but that sounds cool.
I remember seeing something about that.
Yeah,
I would be more interested in going to Starbucks if they sold liquor.
Or at least, like, a couple local craft beers. Mm-hmm. I'd go.
Well, I did find out they're opening the Alamo Draft House next year on the island, and... The bar/museum is going to be curated by the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh shit. I don't know what that means, but I like it.
Yeah, apparently it's going to be like the... Because each Alamo Draft House obviously has like a bar. Mm-hmm. But the one here is like they entered a deal with the RZA.
That's awesome. Wow. They were actually just here last month in D.C. I wasn't ready to go to a concert yet because of standing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they were hearing a bunch of my friends. Yeah, standing related things. Because I'm still a cripple, basically. But yeah, so a bunch of my friends went. I am handy capable, damn it.
Oh, apparently, I'm reading up on Starbucks and liquor. Apparently, they did, and they discontinued it last year.
Oh, because I know they were talking about doing it on a couple of the main stores in Seattle first, and then they were talking rolling it out.
That reminds me of that one time Burger King tried to do it in the city.
Just going to say.
They did?
The Whopper city bar. It was a hot mess from the get-go. I don't even know how long it's actually stayed open, but I remember they built one in Midtown, and I think they had coming soon on the window, and they were having a bitch of a time getting a liquor license.
Jeez.
In New York City.
Okay, and I've had beer at McDonald's or Burger King's before in, like, Korea and Japan.
Yeah,
that's pretty normal.
Probably get away with it more in the, outside of the New York, United
States. New York seems like a horrible place to even try to do anything liquor-related, because I know they're, like, New York and New Jersey are, like, strictly, like, government-run.
Jersey's worse.
Shitty.
I mean, at least New York, you can buy, like, liquor in the supermarkets. Like, you need to literally go to a liquor store in Jersey.
Right? Virginia, you have to go to ABC liquor stores to buy liquor.
Oregon's that way too. Like,
you can buy.
Oregon always copies New Jersey.
Yeah, you can buy the. So the ABC liquor stores here are state run, and that's the only place you can buy hard liquor. But you can buy wine and beer at gas stations and grocery stores. So that's okay.
Home improvement stores.
I thought you were going to say the show Home Improvement.
Yeah. What does Tim Allen have to do with this?
Going to the liquor store, kids.
I mean, that would be cool. Buy a new Dremel set and a 12-pack or something.
Damn right. Get hammered when you're using your hammer drill.
See, there you go.
Someone needs to come up with a concept like that, like liquor and home improvement. But they don't sell nails.
The Home Improvement brothers, as they get drunk in wreck houses.
Don't sell nails at the Home Improvement liquor store.
No, it's you go in there, you can get totally plastered and work on projects with your significant other.
You could get totally plastered and buy plaster.
Ooh. Oh, look at you.
Get plastered when you buy her in your drywall. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with that one. All right. So, tonight.
So that was the show.
Thanks for listening.
All of our show. We're going to take a commercial break at this point. When we come back, we have Rob Tantrum. He's a comedian slash rapper. He's going to talk about his new album and about improv and about a whole lot more. It's a fun interview to do in the future.
And I think you will love it.
And
it's definitely in the future.
You'll love it.
You will.
And we'll be back.
This is Sean.
And Chris.
From the Childhood Remastered podcast, where we look back on the TV shows and movies from our youth to see if they're still worth a damn.
Or not.
Or not, which is far too often the case.
You can listen to new episodes every Thursday, where we overanalyze some of our favorites.
And not so favorites.
And hopefully make you think.
And laugh.
We'll revisit the best and worst of Saturday morning cartoons.
Nickelodeon and Disney.
A couple of movies our parents probably shouldn't have let us watch.
Yeah, there were definitely a few of those.
And you can check us out at childhoodremastered.com.
And remember, we're ready to believe you.
Wait, what? Isn't that Ghostbusters?
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Back to the Future? What are you doing?
I don't know how to end this.
ChildhoodRemastered.com.
Wicky, wicky, wicky.
And we're back from the break. That was a fun commercial ad that I don't know what it was yet.
John.
Yes, focus. Our guest this week is a New York-based rapper and comedian. His new album, Disturbed, Depressed, Inadequate, is available on pretty much any digital media. Plus, amazingly, going to be available on cassette tape. Remarkable. Rob Tantrum, please welcome to the... I said that in out of order. Please welcome Rob Tantrum to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to welcome.
Yeah, welcome us to the show.
Yes, welcome your excitement. Show.
Yes.
I'm Rob Tantrum, and today I'm talking... Okay, I had to do that. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Disturbed, Depressed, and Inadequate.
That's me.
Could you tell us a little bit about the album?
Ooh. Sure. It's a... crazy story of originally the album came about because I sent a rap song to Dan Harmon and his podcast Harmontown because I'm a huge admirer of Dan's.
Sure. And
happened quite some time. I'm a comedian and a writer, and it all the things worked out the way I wanted them to. He heard it on the show and he liked it, and he happened to be working on a project that incorporated music. So the timing worked out well that I flew out to LA shortly after that, and we worked together in the studio for 2 days on a different project. And through meeting Dan and, you know, pitching him a bunch of ideas and giving him my background and rapping a bunch for him, he encouraged me, you know, to make a make an album, which I wasn't planning on doing at that moment. But, you know, when your writing hero shows in and tells you to make an album, you do it.
You don't really say no.
You don't say no. So that was the original seed of it. And I mean, it's not like it was, there was nothing before then. I've been, writing raps and, you know, it's mostly a private little, side hustle. It's not a hustle. There's no hustle to it. I don't make any money off it. A side passion.
Yeah. I was going to say more like a passion project.
Yeah. Passion project. There you go. Something that it really took Dan Harmon telling me to do it, to put something out. Like I put out one mixtape of the very first songs that I wrote like 6 or 7 years ago. And then since then, Crack Baby Gap. Yeah.
Nice.
Which, was supposed to be kind of, a fusion of like my sensibilities of, or just my background and hip hop fused together. It was kind of like, I don't know, whatever. It was a title that I was doing a bit with a friend over text of what my rap album would be called. And I woke up from a nap and texted that back. And she was like, that should be the title. Awesome. So that's a straight out of nap idea. But, but anyway, yeah, so I made that mixtape and, was really happy with the feedback that I got to it. You know, just I was in college at the time and my friends and then other people who I didn't know were listening to it and liking it. And I got a lot of good responses. And also, you know, where I was recording it, I was recording at a rap studio and, that relationship with the producer there, Mike Spitz, is kind of what propelled me, you know, through a lot of self-doubt. You know, he was the one who was like, oh, this is actually, you know, I went in like, oh, I don't know, this is going to be stupid. And then it was, you know, this is actually good. You don't have to do it as a joke type thing. But anyway, so but I do have a lot of, inner conflict about rapping, about, you know, being an interloper or intruding on hip hop, just because it's not in any way mine to, intrude on. And I'm such a huge hip hop fan that I respect the culture and I don't want to defile it. So they're basically like there's been like a concept album a year that has been, you know, made to some degree of production and then set aside because I decide this is a terrible idea. it's been a long and windy road. And then Dan kind of saying, hearing all of that and then encouraging me, like, you know, he said very kind things and it was everything I ever wanted to hear from him. So awesome. I decided to do it. And, then the idea just kind of was the natural subject matter of, all right, if I'm going to make an album, which I have a lot of, you know, qualms about doing, I'm going to be forthcoming about how I feel and, you know, be honest about the one thing I have authority over, which is myself, sure. You know, in my firsthand experience. And yeah, so it's kind of a very introspective, self-loathing exploration of myself as a character. And I even, made it, I took it even more out of my direct control in the, you know, narrative of it, because aliens are extracting these songs from my, you know, from my psyche, from my unconscious mind. Cause I didn't even want to, you know, take the perspective of I'm a rapper, listen to me rap, you know. I connected with through Starburns Industries and SBI Press with the fellas who produced the music, Superfool, Kevin Hall and Shaheen Kiani, their production duo. And Kev is a rapper too, and I – Casey Rupp at Starburns after I'd been there and set up shop there for a couple days and was outlining, you know, what I thought the album could be in the story and everything, you know, was like, hey, here's some friends of mine and they do just like really good hip hop and silly stuff and their stuff kind of made me think of your stuff. And I was already ready to, I had an idea of what I wanted the album to sound like, and he played me their stuff, and it was just, it couldn't have been a better match. And then, and then I worked with them over, several months. They're LA based and I live in New York and I have a life in New York. So it was a lot of travel back and forth. Like, this probably could have been done a lot quicker if I had just stayed until I finished it.
So like every other weekend in LA basically.
Yeah. Or I was, I went for like 3 weeks at a time and then came back for a couple weeks and then went back and forth. And, but it was a lovely experience. And, Dan was certainly supportive throughout the whole conception of it, and gave me encouragement along the way, as well as other people at Starburns. I don't know. That's probably I'm talking more as if you need more of an answer.
This is great.
I don't
actually.
Think it's we a crazy do. Experience. It's fantastic and amazing.
So you just killed all the questions I was going to ask,
right?
Shit. I'm sorry.
Perfect. All right. Great talking to you.
Well, I'm sure Matt can probably talk your ear off about improv.
I was going to ask about that. So you were at UCB for quite a while.
Yeah, I've been taking. Or, I mean, I'm not currently taking improv classes, but I started taking improv classes at UCB when I was 16. I grew up in Westchester, which is a suburb outside of Manhattan and New York City. And I had started doing stand up when I was 15.
Wow.
And I was encouraged by people around me. And, you know, ultimately, when you're doing comedy in New York, someone says, "Oh, if you want to really be good, you got to go to UCB." Mm-hmm. So then I did that, and I continued doing that throughout the rest of high school. And that was incredible. I really can't give it enough credit as, like, you know, a teenager trying to find confidence in your identity and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And just to kind of, that was great for me at that. I needed that at that moment. And I think my life started getting better when I was like, yes. And, you know,
That's awesome. You said as a teenager, man, it took me, you know, I started doing improv like 37, 38, I'm 40 now. And it was because I hated being in front of people. I couldn't do it. Didn't like it.
Yeah. And it, did that, it changed that for you?
It did. I love it now.
You have a podcast now. So
My listeners can hear me now, all three of them. But,
I was going to be nice and say all five.
All right, round up. We're rounding up tonight.
Shout out to Grandma.
Love you, Grandma.
Love you, Gam.
Love you, Meemaw.
It definitely helped, though. And I love doing it, so I started going, you know, watching an improv theater. Have you ever heard of them?
No, but I don't know anything.
They're not really big. So, So I went there through their five levels, and they're all like, the instructors there all talk about the cult of UCB, basically.
It is a cult. It's awful. I mean, it's great, and it's also incredibly problematic. And I shouldn't bash UCB. It's a wonderful place where I met most of the people who I collaborate with. And
we can edit that part out.
You don't have to. There's plenty of publicized problems with UCB, I started doing that to the end of high school, and I completed their program, and then I went to film school in New York, so at NYU, and the reason was that I wanted to stay in New York doing comedy, because at that point, you know, I was on some indie teams, and I was performing regularly, and I had
doing like Harold stuff.
I auditioned for a Harold team 1 year that I was, because I was eligible, and I really hate auditioning for stuff in general. I mean, that's not always true. I didn't continue doing stuff with. Basically, this is not an interest. I don't know if this is interesting at all. This is my personal history.
Fun.
The Sketch 101 class, and I mean, the end of the story is that mostly my involvement with UCB still is sketch related. Like, that's my main thing. I took Sketch 101, and at the same time, I got onto this group at NYU called Hammercats. That's a sketch comedy group that I, again, I mean, the connecting the dots through, I mean, you could connect dots through anything, but it was, I loved Donald Glover from Community and his music, and him and DC Pearson and Dominic Dierkes from Derek Comedy, who I already loved, you know, were Hammercats. And, and that was just like a thing where I, that was what convinced me to go audition, despite hating auditions. And yeah, and then that group became like a very nerdy fraternity throughout the rest of college. And we did shows every month and we had writers meetings every week. And it just kind of taught me how to write and perform and do all the things that I now do. But I wasn't really doing much UCB stuff during that time. But then I, so yeah, so then that was college. That was the four years. And I ended up directing that group. And then when I graduated, I went back into the UCB sketch system. And then just very quickly, you know, it was kind of, you know, I skipped Sketch 101 and then went right into Sketch 201, which usually people don't have like 4 years of intensive sketch training at that point. So it was fortunately just kind of a nice fast track where, you know, one of the teachers kind of was like, oh, this guy should be in contention for this. And then I was on a got on a Maud Night team, which is the Monday night sketch teams. That do the same thing of like writing and putting on a new show every month. And awesome. I did that for a few years. That team is called Nipsey. And yeah, and then we eventually had another slot outside of Mod Night. And that was a big part of what I was doing. Also my writing partner, Max Ash, comedy writing partner, although we have written some music together, who I met from Hammercats and who I lived with in college and who's my best friend. He and I, best friends. He and I, have done stuff. We had a 2-man show at UCB for a while about the subway. That was really fun. A sketch show, that, had an awful name. We were so excited about the name. But
I feel that's a lot of, comedy troupes at UCB though.
It's so well, the problem with it is because we wanted, there's kind of this mystical element of like everything that happens in the subway happens for a reason. And the, the sketches are little vignettes of like things that you would see in the subway. And then we just went very, we took a huge left turn with all the, I don't know it. I'm not going to try and pitch a sketch show that happened.
Anyways, go.
The name that we had was Being Boong, the Great and Powerful MTA, which is long. And we wanted it to be, you know, like the sound that the Doors make, like Bing Boong, but everyone always called it like Bing Bong. No one got that that's what we were going for. Even was that people in close, like,
I was gonna say, is that like, was that people in New York that weren't getting it?
It was people in New York. Yeah, it was, it was our parents who'd be spoken to a lot of it. Yeah, it was everyone. Everyone was like, oh, how's Bing Bong doing? Because I guess I think we overestimated how closely people were going to pay attention to the like, because I remember when we were talking about it, it's like it's got to be two E's and then two O's. Like,
I don't know. That's a pretty iconic sound, to be honest.
It really is.
Bing Bong. But I guess then, everyone always, you know, transcribes it into speech, so no one, it's not like, oh, we've always, it's not like TikTok, it's not like one of those onomatopoeias that we see all the time and we know that's what we're hearing. But the worst part was, you know, when you have a well, it wasn't terrible, but when you have a show at UCB, you like host things like Herald Night, like we hosted Herald Night a bunch of times, and you have to, you know, do bits and tell people about your show, and I hated telling like this audience of people like our show is called Being Boom. But yeah, so anyway, and we have another show that we wrote that's actually a musical that's we wrote a while ago, and then the UCB moved theaters and we kind of submitted it during that time, and then we got a slot, but then I was going back and forth to LA. So we're kind of finally doing this, you know, half hour musical sketch show that we wrote, that was originally called Cut Off. And that was about Max and I, like, playing versions of ourselves who get caught off, cut off, like too late in their mid 20s. And it's like, just like these just very irredeemable characters who are the worst versions of us. But we renamed it, or we rebranded it to, Two Worthless White Men, an Unrelatable Musical, which was just felt more correct. Like, we just want people going into it like, oh, we hate ourselves for this. And like,
they're not characters you're going to relate to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not going to come away with a good picture of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just got, so that's a UCB thing, but, yeah. So that's my UCB answer.
Are you still teaching there, or do you teach there?
No, I've never taught there. I've directed, MAW teams there. And you know, done things similar to teaching, but I've never been a teacher at, UCB. No.
Gotcha. Are you still there though? Cause I've been dying to go back.
Am I still there? Well, yeah. I haven't. Well, so Max and I are putting up this this musical in January, I think, for like an audition for a regular spot. And I think we'll get it because it's pretty good, unless we majorly fuck up.
no so, pressure.
Always pop.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll be there soon enough and I'll have something back there. But at the moment, one of the first things I did when this album opportunity came about was just kind of – I parted ways with this sketch team, that my UCB sketch team, who I love everyone on it. And it's just – it had been years. And it's I was ready for something not UCB for a little while. The UCB system is wonderful in what it teaches you and what its philosophies are and all the people who you get to see, because it's just an incredible magnet for talent. And, and when we got the slot for the first time at UCB, that felt like the biggest thing I'd ever done in my life. Like, and then it fucking sucked because I would, whenever I was talking to people who weren't in the comedy community and they would ask me what I did, I felt like such a, you know, like if you say, oh, so do you know UCB? And if they know UCB, like, oh, of course. It's like, yeah, well, I'm doing stuff at UCB. And then it's like, oh, look at you. But if they don't know UCB, then you have to try and convince them that it's a prestigious, like, well-known theater in New York, where they've probably lived their whole life and never heard of it. But anyway, UCB is great for that. And then awful for, you know, it's not everyone. It's expensive for
sure.
Classes are now, they're incredibly competitive and you have to, for a reason, but you have to go through all the classes in order to audition for the house teams and everything. And then once you're on a house team, you have to pay your director and you pay dues for, you know, rehearsal space and you pay for all your props. And, you know, there's no cut of the door type thing that I know a lot of other theaters do, but it's still, you know, one of the best just breeding grounds for talent. And I'm proud to have been accepted into it. And now I feel like, I could take it or leave it, or that's a flip.
No, that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is definitely pretty awesome. I've always wanted to go up there. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been a handful of times to some shows. I think the last one I went like in, I want to say 2012 to, Del Close.
Oh yeah. How did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed the parts that I was able to see, and then I made the mistake of going out during the right before the popular stuff and couldn't get back in.
I can't. I mean, it's a personal thing. I've been in New York for like 10 years of Del Close marathons, and I've gone to maybe one show one of the years. It's just the most. I mean, some years I've had good excuses, like I was out of town for a wedding or something, but it's the most For me as a person who's incredibly, I hate crowds. I need my personal space. I don't like waiting in line or people touching me accidentally. Like I can't enjoy anything if things are overcrowded and all that stuff.
It's like Comic-Con. So,
yeah, it was, I mean, I would never, I mean, that's the, that stuff is my absolute nightmare. And then the sad part is like with Comic-Con, there's so many things that I would love, panels I would love to see or toys that I would love to buy at Comic-Con. But, and the same thing with Del Close, because it's like just the all-stars. Everyone is coming to do stupid shows and, you know, and then there's also all, so many of my friends are comedians and the, and I'm very much a introverted and sometimes reclusive person. And I always feel so left out, like out of the, I mean, in a million ways when I'm not performing, but
the bigger like, community
with the bigger community, but also, but especially Del Close. Cause it just seems like, it feels like I'm deciding not to go to Woodstock, you know, like on a much smaller scale, but it's like, I'm actively passing up on probably some of the funniest things like I'd ever see. But I mean,
You would have people touching you.
Yeah, yeah. Right? That's the trade-off. I think that's why I think I went that once, and that was it for me. I've never really gone back since, and that's probably the reason.
I think it's a, you know, it's a, I also think it's a single person's game. Like if you have if you have to go, because it's like you stay out all night and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a partner who's equally as nerdy and available to go see comedy shows, that it's not, you know, it's not in any way pleasant. You have
you can't really go on your own.
Yeah, you and you've hit the nail on the head because I haven't been back since, and that's around, I think that was maybe like 6 months to a year before I met my now wife.
And there you go.
That was it.
Del Close is a single person's game.
There you go.
So you're saying I shouldn't bring my fiance?
Don't. No. It's and a wonderful, inexpensive thing to do in the city. I think that's how I first – maybe I first knew of it because my sister, who's 15 years older than me and lived in Manhattan at the time, who knew I was coming to, you know, doing comedy in the city. I'm not sure if it was someone from stand-up, the stand-up world, who told me to go to UCB, but I remember the first – the first or second show I went to was with my sister because she was just like, you're dating now and this is a good, cheap date. It's like $5 and it's like, I don't know, everyone's kind of smushed together and it's a real nice, fun experience. Not that I said it smushed together like it was some kind of like pickup move, like get close to her.
Why hello there?
I just mean it's very like – It's moved, and but I it was under a Gristides, and it was just there's so many awful places to sit because there were these big support bars, you know, foundation load bearing pillars. But yeah, it has such an amazing charm, and I miss it. You know, not as much as people who. The other thing about UCB is you kind of have to. It's the same kind of thing where you have to like not live there, but it takes a lot of dedication to like, you know, get known in the community because you have to do everyone's shows and be at all the shows. And that's, I think I realized once this kind of once in a lifetime, go hop on a plane and meet your hero. And then he's going to tell you everything you ever needed to hear to be validated about your work and whatever. Like that was when that happened, I was like, oh, maybe this is how I work. Like maybe I, you know, I like to like work on something and hone something for a while and do a bunch of research. And, you know, I was able to go into that room and be impressive enough to, you know, whatever.
You made an impression.
I made an impression because it was something that I had worked on myself and not because I had, you know, spent so many hours in, you know, a comedy theater, not that, which is right for a lot of people and probably very enjoyable. It's just, you know, everyone is different, and I don't, I need, you know, that introvert time to recharge and not be around the outside world.
Yeah, that's that is one thing I found when I was taking like all the improv classes in DC. It's very social. You know, everyone has to go out after every class to the bar next door, and you know, I, for my work, I'm up at like five o'clock in the morning every morning, and they're out till midnight or partying. I get it, but I don't want to party with you people.
It's a young man's game.
It is a young man's game. I am no longer a young man.
It's a young single man's game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just in a dominating relationship, and I think I'm not. I mean, I'm just, you know, when you share your life with a person, you can't think of just it's like a casual relationship or single person, young person.
Yeah.
Game. Well, level one especially was Hookup Central. That was like singles outings on Groupon for level one. you know, yeah. Exactly. Level two, that people start getting more serious because you actually have to pay to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
By level three, they're into it, and it's not Hookup Central anymore.
Yeah.
Oh.
The level one class is just like singles mingles.
When my level one class, I was 16, and there was a large age gap for the next person. So maybe as much as I would have, like in fantasy, liked it to be a Hookup Central for me, I didn't have that experience, but
I'm 16, you're 38. Hello.
Yeah. but that makes sense. Like the 101 is just the people dipping their toes in, but they're there to fuck.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Dipping more than their toes.
I'm here for improv and meeting babes.
Yeah. Wow.
And we're all out of improv?
Yes, and.
Yes,
yes, and.
Very cool. So, Rob, switching gears, want to talk a bit about the album. So the title track is called I Don't Feel So Good?
Single? I Don't Feel So Good, the single. The title, because the title is, there's no title track, I guess, because the title doesn't have a track with the same title.
Well, it's a single that came out prior to the album.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I knew exactly what you meant, but I still had to overconvolute it out loud.
I don't know. I'm not.
Stop. Hold the presses. No. That's not what it is. No.
I'm not in not so much talk of music yes industry.
I straight up no-butted you.
Yeah. You should never do that, damn it.
All that improv training right down the shitter.
The title track I Don't Feel So Good. Yeah, that was a single, and it was one of the earlier songs that we recorded. And before I start going down a road of answering a question, did you ask me one?
I guess take us through the process of
open the door on I Don't Feel So Good. Mm. Well, so there are a lot of doors into this house, but one of them was I really like one of the reasons that I gravitated to Dan's philosophy of, you know, the story circle and story and character and all that stuff, or maybe I developed it after this, but I love to break things down into formula and kind of intellectualize things and you know, like television is my big passion, or
sure,
movies. And so what I did when it was on the table to do this album was, because I didn't have an idea, I just needed a starting point. I listened to all my favorite, or all what I considered to be the best, like debut rap albums, and made notes on, you know, how many tracks were on all of them, this track, what track did what, like, what do I like about this track? And, you know, and just kind of tried to find a balance to it, because I wanted it to, you know, fall into that. I think as an artist, like, you always look to things that inspire you and draw from them and pull from them and kind of see, okay, well, what is this making me think of? So one of the things that I really liked from College Dropout, which is one of my favorite albums and definitely one of my favorite debut albums, I would rank it in, you know, all the like greatest of all time rapper conversations, I think all are determined by how good their first album has to be a classic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but yeah, so that's one of my favorites, and I really loved. I was kind of trying to pull from "We Don't Care," being kind of like a up tempo bop with a really kind of sobering and deflating message of like, here's a song for the kids to sing, and it's about drug dealing it just to get by, and like we weren't supposed to make it past 25. You know, like I like that you know,
realism.
That realism, but yeah, just that juxtaposition was the word I was trying to think of. And I think it matches kind of my sensibilities. I like to play with really dark ideas in a light way if possible. And like most of my sketches involve death in some way. Not all of them, but I think I would classify myself as, I know it's a broad thing to say, as, you know, having kind of like a dark sense of humor. So yeah, I thought that was kind of a fun way to deliver a message about like hopeless depression, just being kind of unrelentlessly upbeat and fun, and kind of something you would get stuck in your head, because then there's also all these songs that are poppy and you get the chorus stuck in your head, but it's maybe not really how you feel. Like I don't go, you know, like it's a thing about, you know, shorty at the club and or whatever. I don't know what song I'm thinking of. But yeah, I like the idea of creating an anthem for people who felt this way, which I now know is I knew before it was a lot of people, but I'm really happy that people have resonated with it. And yeah, and then the beat just kind of came from a very I don't feel so good place, because it was something that Shaheen was going to hate it and was going to throw out. Like, we did a lot of work out of Kevin and Shaheen Live Together with a bunch of other creative dudes in Echo Park. And Kevin and Shaheen have connecting rooms. So that was kind of like the base of operations, Superfool headquarters, where we made a lot of the stuff, like all the beats and, All But One beat, which was my friend Will Moritz in New York, just so I don't gloss over that. Yeah. Yeah, so it was one day where Kevin and I were maybe recording vocals and we're taking a break at the same time. And we're like, oh, you know, Shaheen like had gone off to make some beats, and he was like, I'm feeling really shitty. It was a really unproductive day. Like, I'm going to just scrap these. There's this one. And he played the, you know, dun, 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 the like, and it was just, you know, it was a beautiful thing, because like a lot of the album is like, don't self-doubt yourself out of something nice, you know, or something that other people will appreciate, because we just all immediately were, you know, jamming to the beat, and it's without, you know, like additional layers of production have been put on top of it, but the original thing, like the vibe was so Jackson 5-y, and it was like hypnotic. And, you know, my move with anything when I'm trying to come up with a song, or if the beat comes first, is just to open voice memos and just start, you know, humming melodies and, doing some, you know, placeholder flows and stuff like that. And yeah. And then like, I Don't Feel So Good came right out. And, yeah. And then I did originally want to put a choir of kids on it. we didn't end up making that happen, 'cause as you can imagine, that was difficult.
How hard is it to get a choir of kids?
Someone who knows what they're doing probably could snap their fingers and get them, but I did not know, you know. I reached out to, like, at first I was thinking like, maybe the right way to go is like a church choir, because, you know, you want people who can sing and who know how to like take direction and would be comfortable doing that. And then my second thought was, is it maybe more in line with me if I check with my temple, like, that I grew up at, if there's a choir there? And so I tried to get that to happen because I thought that would be so funny. Like, you know, a bunch of like Jewish kids from Scarsdale on this album. But yeah, that didn't happen. But Church, Cassandra Church, who I met through Dan and Jeff, she dates Jeff and she works for Starburns. She's a photographer and a singer, and she's awesome. She did some backup vocals on that, so we have her on that second hook. And yeah, I think it turned out real fun. Oh, and I got I put that Reggie Watts sample at the beginning because Reggie Watts is just one of my ultimate favorites in so many ways. But I think I had also, you know, I think this was the first real trip where I was getting to work with Superfool. And, you know, when you kind of meet creative people like you, or at least in this instance, like they showed me a bunch of their stuff. I showed them a bunch of my stuff. And then, you know, we were kind of referencing things. Like I made them a lot of playlists of like, here's the sounds I'm imagining. And, you know, and we just kind of found a mutual creative language. And I think I remember the night before we made that, I had been showing them just a bunch of Reggie Watts on Conan clips because that, just all of his guest segments on Conan O'Brien just blew my mind in high school. Yeah. And so that's it. And so then I cut that up and, luckily it was nice. I mean, like I have a background in editing and film and stuff. So it was nice. While I'm nowhere near the caliber of production that, you know, Kevin and Shaheen, I mean, it's just totally different, but it was nice. Like for the skits and the samples, like I cut those all up and all that stuff.
They sound great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, they definitely do. Really, I mean, it's
hard on it. One of the reasons I just remember when I was answering this, I was saying like, I looked at a bunch of these albums and kind of, outlined mine based on that. Originally the album was like 20 or 21 tracks long.
Man. And,
there are a bunch of things from that version of it that still, you know, exist and are in different various stages of production, like either the written or the recorded or, they're recorded, but they need another take or something. I don't know.
They're just not ready yet.
They're just not ready yet. And it was, this is like my first time making an album and a lot of it was out of pocket and it just made more financial and the timing. We had to focus on like something tighter. Just because, I mean, like this was not, I'm super proud and super happy with the like result of what we made. And, you know, it was like a lot of care was taken with it. My ideal version of it had a lot more features on it and I would have been happy to be on it as little as possible. but yeah, I mean, you just gotta kind of be like, it was just crazy because I had this very incredible thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to make a rap song, get the Dan Harmon's attention. Oh, it worked. I can do anything now.
Nice.
Really? Okay.
I can get this person on the song and this person on the song. And, you know, partly it's people around you saying like, oh yeah, we'll call that person for you. And, you know, but yeah, just getting realistic about it. And the original deadline was like in June or something. Because originally it was going to come out in August. So it was a longer thing, a more complete story. I mean, I think it still kind of works. It was definitely way more story circle before, like even very evenly distributed. And, I mean, we just kind of connected. It was also like the same time that all these, the Kanye produced tapes from like Wyoming, like the Ye tape and The Kids Don't See Ghosts and Nas's tape and Daytona, Pusha T's album and Tiana Taylor, like they all were coming out and they're all 7 tracks. And I was like, this is, and you know, I have so many issues with Kanye nowadays.
Well, yeah.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? And I feel like I need to say that because, you know, but there's no,
clarify.
There's no denying that I like listened to those and I was like, oh, like these are so tight. There's no excess, whatever. And yeah. And then it was just like the last trip out there where we were just trying to get everything in final form was 11 days. And I figured 11 days, let's get 11 tracks. 11 is my lucky number. Born on 11/11. No. I use 11 in a lot of stuff. So I was like, all right, 11 makes sense. 11 works.
So do you still feel like you have stories to tell from this one that can make it into another one?
Well, originally what I wanted to do was because, as you mentioned, that it's going to be on cassette through SBI Press, which is super fun.
That's and, awesome.
Yeah, very neat. And I wanted to make a B-side with the extra stuff and, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff, just outtakes or whatever, you know. There's a ton of extra B-side material, and I plan to make that, but it's, again, more time and effort and money, and I didn't want to just slap something together when I, you know, a lot of the, I don't know, it was just, it could have gone a different route where it was like, maybe if there was a lot of, well, if there was a bigger splash when the A side was turned in, maybe I would have put in more effort on the B side, but it just got to a point where it's like, I don't want to make this right
gotcha,
now.
Gotcha.
You know, I don't want to make something bad and put it on the back of something that I tried so hard to make perfect.
Right. That's admirable.
And it's the mixing and it's the, you know, like I can do a cheaper version of it, but that's the reason why I don't do projects, why I don't finish or put out projects a lot of the time, is because I want to at least get it as good as I know I can get it. Right. And I mean, and I already feel with this album, like I know I can make a better album than this already because now I have one under my belt and, just the process of, it was so valuable of working with, obviously collaboration is something that I've, done throughout my creative career, but working with other people, I've never been in the situation where it's just kind of like everyone holed up in the studio, like the dream kind of like, oh, one person is working on one beat. We're working on one other thing. Oh, now I get to hear this beat. Now I'm going to walk off and write to that while this gets mixed. And then I'm going to come back and record the thing for the, you know, where it's just
the well-oiled machine.
Crazy. Well-oiled machine. Yeah. I mean, I've worked on it on a much smaller, you know, in a much smaller way, just like on a one-on-one thing, but like where I'm, you know, we only have this amount of time. It's not like we're here till it's done. So yeah, that was awesome. And I now know how to navigate that a lot better. And, also this was kind of an album of songs that I had to get out of the way, like in order, cause I like two of the songs on the album were the first two songs that I showed Dan that we recorded in those first 2 days, cause they were going to go on an album that he was making. Mm-hmm. And those were the Yo Ambulance song and mm-hmm. Pants Dance, which were like old songs that, as I said, I always do like complicated concept albums. And they were two that I could pick out where there are no references to other things in the story. They're mm-hmm. just kind of accessible, silly, like in-person good gut reaction songs. And so I don't know if... I mean, and obviously Dan throughout the process, like was seeing updates and hearing new stuff and was always just, like way on board with everything. But I don't know if his original idea for me was to make like just a straight up goofball, like lonely, like more, less introspective and self-loathing and, I don't know what, but I didn't feel like I could make that album until I got this one out of the way.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I wanted to address issues of like cultural appropriation and, at least say that I'm, you know, have the back and forth, like in thought spiral where it's like, does it help that I'm addressing it? Like, it doesn't excuse it. And just kind of comment on it to, I just wanted to show that I'm aware and that I don't do this with a, I don't do this lightheartedly, and I'm not just trying to make joke music to because I'm, I think that I can. I very much don't think I should. I just love to. And yeah, it's the thing that I'm always. Yeah. And so, right. So that's that.
Yeah.
Well said.
Well, I think we've kept you longer than 30 minutes. So
yeah,
sorry about that.
I think that's in part my really long answers.
Yeah. But
very
well,
interesting.
Well
though,
said, you know, we learned a lot about improv. We learned a lot about your album. Yeah. We learned that you shouldn't say no to Dan Harmon, but Dan Harmon says, you know, do it.
Yeah.
I do have one question for you before we finish here. And this is something I've always wondered. What does Jeff B. Davis smell like?
He,
like sandalwood and vanilla, or
like he's kind of one of these. Well, probably the best answer would be he smells like Fernet Branca, Fernet Branca, his drink that is like this very weird spiced. The thing that he drinks, his drink.
All right.
His drink smells like an essential oil and it kind of tastes like one.
Oh,
like,
God.
That's his go-to thing. But he's just like an incredibly handsome person to stand next to. And I don't know that I would have noticed any odor because he's just such a clean and well pressed suit person.
I've never seen him not in a suit.
I have. And it's,
is it weird?
It was horrifying. Like, I usually take note of what people are wearing. But I immediately was like, wait, what's wrong? There's something wrong. And, I've seen Jeff in casual wear and Jeff is great. And Church, they're both super great and they couldn't have been cooler, people just
awesome.
Throughout the whole process. They're great.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
So for the folks at home, one more time, Rob Tantrum's new album, Disturbed, Depressed, Inadequate, you could find it on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud. I said iTunes already.
It's actually not on SoundCloud, I don't think.
Oh, because that's what the press release says.
The only one song is on SoundCloud.
Lies!
Just the single.
Yeah.
You know what? We'll just look for it on the cassette tape.
Yep. Yeah. Just
because that's
just
the only one that matters.
Google set, Rob.
Well, we will have links up, though, when we post this
of
album.
Of course, we'll have links in the show notes. Rob, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
I am not super, super active on social media. I mean, like, I'm not posting a lot. I'm always looking at it.
Home address, though.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. my home address is... you can find me on like Instagram and Twitter at Rob Tantrum. I'm in New York. Look for my name, and if you're going to UCB or things around, I don't know. That's terrible. I have nothing. I'm writing right now, so I'm kind of like
there you go.
Really, I would
lay low.
You would need my home address to find me.
Perfect. Enough said.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, thank you once again for chatting with us, and you have a good evening.
Yeah, thanks so much
for coming on.
Have a good one.
And we'll be back after this commercial break. If you could go back in time,
you'd be wasting your time. Hey, what do we have in common with Doctor Who?
We're hopeless nerds.
Well, that, but we also go back in time.
Oh, yeah, of course. We go back in time.
We're Rewind Cinema Podcast. I'm Matt Morris.
I'm Gabe Whitehurst.
And what we do is we go back and we select a random year in cinema history. Select a random movie for every month of that year and review it.
Yeah, and we have a really good time doing it. So you know what? You should listen.
Listen
to our show. If you like to revisit classic things that you grew up on or that just happened last year, we don't know. We're hopping around. We're crazy. We're reviewing things that are all over the place.
He's literally crazy.
I'm literally going crazy right now, but you should listen to Rewind Cinema.
And we're back. That was an awesome interview.
Time has passed.
A little later that evening.
Time in the future.
3 hours later.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, that is the show. Thanks to Rob Tantrum for stopping by. Matt, you got anything to plug?
Yeah, I got something to plug.
Oh, baby.
No, I don't. You know what? I'm going to plug DayQuil. That stuff has been getting me through the days the last week or so.
I think it does that.
What's that?
I think it does that.
Yeah, no, it does. And I'm pretty happy about the results from my DayQuil. So,
very good.
Anyone out there, try some DayQuil.
Very cool. Jesus. Jason, would you like to plug NyQuil now?
I'm actually going to plug ZQuil.
Oh, shit.
Great.
Gotta be different.
Yep, I've used it a few times in the last week or so because my sleep schedule is getting a little wonky. But yeah, that stuff's great. You definitely get a little bit of a hangover from it. A little foggy getting up in the morning afterwards. But yeah, it's good stuff. And also, eventually, jpollardvo.com. There will be stuff on there. Demos and contact information for getting my sweet, sexy, dulcet tones on your creative projects and whatnots. And
vitamins.
Vitamins. ZQuil ads. That's going to be me. I want to be the voice of ZQuil.
I want to be the next voice of Duluth Trading. So, you know, we have our goals to work towards.
I want to be the new Men's Warehouse guy.
Yeah.
Do you guarantee it?
Yeah, I just need to like hit myself in the throat like 20 times and be like, you're going to love the way you look. I guarantee it.
Smoke a lot.
Yes. You know, try and sound like Tom Waits.
I don't know about that one.
I love Tom
Waits. Boxers make you feel like you got a beaver munching on your walnuts.
Angry beaver boxers.
No, I that sounds like Sling Blade.
Yeah.
I like them in the warehouse.
Fried taters.
Anyway, I would like to plug not NyQuil, but insulin. Because it keep me alive.
All right.
And it keep people alive.
And being alive is better than the alternative.
Exactly. Right, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, is it?
And being alive is fun because then you get to listen to stuff on acpnet.net, such as this show, such as Swimcast, Punch Drunk, and a whole lot more. Just go to acpnet.net. You can check out all our social nets up there, Facebook group. fb.com/group/acpnet, twitter.com.
ACPnet.
Yep, ACPnet. No, ACPnet.
ACPnet?
Sure.
ICPnet?
Yes.
Insane Clown Posse?
Yeah, boy.
Okay.
And your bitch can't smile because you knocked her teeth out. Fucking magnets.
No. On that note.
On that note, patreon.com. Whatever.
Stop.
And we will be back with another exciting, hopefully Christmas, because that's coming up, I guess, edition of Adventure Club Podcast. Until then.
Is nobody going to say happy birthday? Wow. Thanks, guys.
Happy birthday.
Jesus. You too.
Happy birthday, Jesus. You were the one coming on down from planet Krypton.
When's your birthday?
Thursday.
Well, it's not your birthday yet.
Happy early birthday.
I'm not saying it yet. It's not his birthday.
Well, this thing's going up freaking Sunday, so it's already like 5 days ago.
John takes like 3 weeks to put these out, so this will come out by New Year's.
Oh,
exactly.
2019.
Happy New Year.
2019, everybody.
Happy New Year,
happy
folks.
Easter 2021. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
Goodbye. Stop button.